Dr. Maccabee is one of the foremost UFO photo analysts and UFO investigators. He's appeared on many TV documentaries, written several books, and appeared here several times. It's nice to have you back, Dr. Maccabee.
Thank you. It was nice to be here.
You've been involved in UFO investigating for many years now. Do you notice anything different about the UFOs that are being seen today and the way that they are being investigated compared to what used to happen?
What used to happen, I guess, 30, 40, 50 years ago, what I call plain vanilla sightings of something that appears to be a solid object at some distance, and person, the witness, does not feel threatened by this thing or maybe amused by it, interested in it and so on, but there's no big emotional reaction. Then in the last 20 or so years, we've been having, I think, more cases of what have been classified as close encounters, where people do get emotionally involved, frightened, or think they're being enlightened, or I don't know, whatever type of response a person might have to seeing something that is seeing the impossible happen, I guess. This occurs not just for people who are actually witnesses of UFOs, but even the people who are not seeing a true UFO, but are not succeeding in identifying something, like somebody who sees the planet Venus for the first time, and when it's the morning star really bright in the morning or really bright at night, and cannot believe how bright it is, and assumes that it must be something close up in the sky. And people have, you know, made reports to me about being, what they think, chased by Venus, or I remember one guy who saw Venus from a parking lot. He didn't know what it was. He thought it was a tremendous UFO sighting. Ran, got his video camera, videotaped for half an hour. Then he sent it to me. Well, he told me, and I suspected it was Venus, as he talked to me over the phone. So I told him, go out and look tomorrow, tonight. The sighting was the night before he talked to me. I said, go out and look tonight and see if you see it. And he did see it. But he sent me the video anyway, and I could see why he was surprised by the video, because Venus was going down. It was in the evening, of course. Venus was going down behind trees. And the light coming through the branches and leaves was modified by the branches and leaves, making weird shapes. And it looked like this thing was changing shape slowly over time as leaves would wiggle in the wind and so on. So it did look strange on the video. He thought it was extremely bright standing there looking at it. And it looked strange on the video, so I could see why he might be confused. And he was having all these emotional reactions about when they're going to land and so on. I think a large part of this sort of a deeper emotional reaction is a result of all the publicity over the last 40 or so years of abduction stuff.
I was going to say, do you think that maybe some of these videos, these hoax videos, I like to call them, that are put out on places like YouTube that show threatening UFOs might have something to do with this?
Well, certainly, because a lot of people go and look at those videos. The video, a new one, for example, the Jerusalem video back in January, I assume you're familiar with.
Yes.
Of a beam, a light that drops downwards over the dome of the rock, at least it appeared to, and then gave, after being there for 20 or 30 seconds, it gives off a bright flash, or a double bright flash, and then zips upwards. And I don't know how many million people saw that, because it went around the net very quickly. And there are all sorts of secondary information sources, you might say, not the primary UFO information sources, but the secondary ones to pick up on spectacular sightings. And, of course, that would have been spectacular. It seemed to be that there were more than one video camera and so on. I think ultimately the whole thing fell apart. But the emotional reaction was there anyway. People saying they're here, they're going to save us, they're going to eat us, they're going to do this, that, whatever. I just saw a message put on Facebook, I guess it was Facebook, the other day, asking the question, why is Spielberg trying to scare us? Huh. And they pointed out that Spielberg has three not nice UFO not type movies coming out. One that's still to come out is the Cowboys and Aliens. But we had 8mm and something else, I think. I forget. So a lot of these movies, well, of course, we had Battle L.A. back in March. A lot of these movies portray the aliens as being mean SOBs, ready to eat us if we don't eat them first. And I'm sure that is part of the emotional, causes part of the emotional reaction, and people beginning to question anything that they see up in the sky. Could it possibly be a UFO if they can't identify it immediately? So it gets to be a very complicated situation, obviously, because different people react differently to the same stimulus.
It seems that UFO and USO sightings, you know, those UFOs that are underwater, have been getting a lot more complex lately and are being seen by larger groups of people. Do you think that this is true? And if so, why do you think that this is happening? Do you think that UFOs have some agenda that we don't know about?
Well, I'm sure they have some agenda, and that question is independent of what you preceded it with. I guess there are, I don't know if there's an increase in sightings of UFOs underwater, but the mix of events which come to the fore, shall we say, are a combination of misidentifications and just plain hoaxes. In the hoax cases, there are usually very detailed descriptions of objects, either photographic description or verbal descriptions. The so-called Chad drone case, D-R-O-N-E, the drone case of several years ago, was an example of something that a construction that had a shape of a UFO that had never been seen before, like almost like a fan, the blades of a fan, with strange writing underneath the bottom blades or whatever. There's just one that looked, well, I guess it was more like a pan with a long handle on it would be a better description.
Yeah.
And the whole thing turned out to be some sort of an advertising ploy. But it's still on the Internet. People who don't know what they're doing can look it up and think, wow, they're here. Well, I would say, yeah, that's probably the right answer, but not the correct evidence, you know.
Yeah.
So the right answer for the wrong reason, so to speak.
Well, I see that most people, they really don't follow through. In other words, they'll look at something, form an opinion, and then they'll never go back to it. So they don't know if, say, for example, we found the reasons for such and such an object appearing, you know, or where it came from. You find
right.
that, too? In other words,
well,
people just make this initial decision right away, and that's it on whatever they see.
Well, yeah, I saw a UFO, and so what? There it is. It's long been known that most people don't report what they saw.
Right.
But, of course, I get lots of stuff by the people who do report, is what it amounts to. Mm-hmm. I don't get the reports that aren't made, let's put it like that.
Yeah, well, if you did, there'd be something the matter.
The reports that I get are split between, I do a lot of photographic stuff, right? People send me photos. I took a photo of a mountain. I took a photo of my grandmother. I took a photo of a house over there. Whatever it was I take a photo of, lo and behold, up in the sky, there's something else. And they're asking me, could it be one of them? They're more neutral about it. Could you identify what this was? And in most cases, whatever it is a little tiny speck of something, which if it's a still photograph, you can't tell anything about the dynamics, what it might have done before, what it might have done afterwards. If the person didn't see it, there's no testimony to go along with a sighting. It's just a strange flaw, photographic flaw. Or very often you could explain it as being an insect that's so close it's out of focus or whatever. It's not probative. It's not doesn't prove anything in most cases. There are a few cases of these accidental UFOs that I call them. Actually, accidental photographic UFO, APU, I should say. there are a few cases where the image is so structured that it looks like it really is something out there, maybe being lit by the sun with a shadow on one side and bright on the other side and so on. There are very few cases like that, but there are some. And they make one suggest that, well, yeah, UFOs can zip by so fast you don't notice them, and if you have a fast shutter on your camera, you can actually capture something. I'm working on a case right now out of Chile, a video taken at an air show. And you see the subject of the air show, which was an F-16 aircraft flyover of an air base in Chile. And the person videotaping this got three frames worth. What I've been sent is a .avi copy of the original. Mm-hmm. It's running at 10 frames per second. And on three frames, they got images that shouldn't be there. The first frame shows a little dot off in the distance. The next frame shows a bigger dot in a somewhat different direction, indicating that if it were a real object, it moved. And then the third frame shows an image that's large enough to actually analyze, you know, and you can see that it seems to have reflectivity. But I'm bothered by the fact that these images of an object that must be moving very fast, these images are not smeared by motion.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is a typical zero-level CGI, computer-generated imagery type of attempt at a hoax. I don't know about this particular case, but I've seen others like this that have turned out to be hoaxes. The person who introduces an image into a real photo. So you take a background video of a scene, hills, mountains, trees, buildings, whatever. And now you go back and frame by frame, you introduce an image and you make it sort of animated. That is, the image moves with respect to the background from frame to frame. Now, this thing, as it moves from one frame to the next, it travels some distance, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're supposed to believe, it travels some distance. That means it's going at some speed. The fact that is the camera opens a shutter or takes an exposure over a period of time indicates that if this thing is moving, if it really is moving, there ought to be motion blur. During the time of the exposure, the object moves a short distance, and so it should have blurred edges. And if you look at the image and find that it's perfectly sharp, then you have to wonder, is this paste on, essentially?
Right, right. Can you tell if somebody used a green screen on this thing?
Well, if they're perfect, I suppose no.
Uh-huh.
A perfect fake would probably go. So if Spielberg were to present me with a UFO video saying, I took this video the other day and I wanted to check out what's in it, I'd say, okay, I go out and do something else. What is it? Light and Magic, what's the name of that company?
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean. Sound and Magic
anyway,
or something.
Yeah, right. Anyway, the point is you get a big enough company involved and a bunch of hotshot CGI guys, they can figure out what it ought to appear like frame by frame and then make it do that.
Well, I think that's one of the problems today, you know. Some people have developed a hobby, and that hobby is to try and fool other people with videos and recordings and different things. I don't know why they would want to put so much time into something just to fool us, you know. And it's made viewing of different appearances of UFOs, it's made it very hard for the people that really investigate these things, I think, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We didn't have that years ago, you know.
It takes up time. Well, we had it years ago, but not in the same, not at the same level.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Everybody having PaintShop Pro or some similar program or a program for generating videos and whatever, it gives a lot more opportunity for guys out there to say, well, let's see what we can do. And there have been situations where after the fact, after the situation has been around for a while, the perpetrator will admit that, oh, yeah, I was just testing out my capability to create something and see if people would be convinced. And then he presents his credentials to some company out in Hollywood, and they say, yeah, you did a good job. We're hiring you or something.
Well, do you think that maybe fraudulent videos that are put up, or maybe there should be a law against these things?
I don't think you can make a law against it. I mean, it's sort of like, at least not in the United States, your right to be an idiot, I suppose.
Well, yeah, you have a right to be an idiot, but do you have a right to try and defraud other people? I know there's no monetary gain, but there is gain of some kind.
If you could prove damages,
right?
If you could prove damages, then you could sue somebody who did this. But I don't know of anybody who's actually been damaged.
Well, you'd have to probably prove psychological damages in this case.
Yeah, right. I think the case for the UFO probably was made during the first 5 years, even, and certainly within the first 50 years of the phenomenon. Hundreds of sightings by people who don't have the capability of creating fake photos or aren't novel writers who could write a whole fiction story and present it as a fact. So the problem then is the people who are coming into it now aren't familiar with the history.
Mm-hmm.
And or at least not as familiar as they should be with the history of the subject. And so they go by what's on the Internet, you know, what's hot right now.
Right.
And they bounce from one sighting to another. I don't know how many, it was 100,000, 200,000, 500,000 videos of UFO, supposed UFOs out there on the Internet.
I couldn't imagine.
Coming from all over the place. And is it a dozen a day or 100 a day? I don't know what gets posted on YouTube. One thing I worry about is we're going to have information Armageddon before too long.
I think you're right.
Quite independent of the UFO situation, when computers get so big that they take over the Earth, to store all the data. But anyway, point is that people coming into it now who don't know what the history is assume that, well, these are all probably true sightings. They don't realize how much of it out there is just plain garbage. I was looking at a video just yesterday of what looks to me like a rocket launch. And it was...
Is that Russian? Was it a Russian rocket launch?
Supposedly.
I think I saw it,
looks like it's upside down. It looks like the thing is falling downward.
Yes, I've seen that, yes.
And as time goes on in the video, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and it begins to have these striations in it that look like what has been shown many times on Russian rocket launches, where they get up into the upper atmosphere, the fuel starts to spread out sideways and blooms out, sort of, so to speak. So anyway, it's being portrayed as a possible... fireball UFO or something like that.
Well, did you notice that in that video there were also these little points of light? Did you see those? And as the rocket is coming down, all of a sudden these little points of light form like a triangle in the front of the rocket coming down towards the Earth, and there's a couple of them at the tail. I don't know if you noticed this.
I don't recall noticing it. I think I looked at it once, and I said, looks to me like a rocket launch. At least you're not going to be able to prove that it isn't.
Well, the one I saw, they admitted it was a rocket launch, and what they were talking about was the points of light, which really didn't have anything to do with the rocket itself, you know?
Well, I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at it again and see if it looked like the points of light really...
I think it depends on what site you look at these things on, you know? Some of them don't explain. They don't explain exactly what they're showing you, you know, and
right.
Some of them just picture it as a rocket or a fireball coming back to Earth, but there are other sites that point out the fact that these little points of light are in it. Some say that if we knew our true history, we would realize that human history is not what we think it is, and we would find that there was alien involvement with our development. Do you believe that?
I'd say I wouldn't be surprised. That, of course, is the... fundamental idea behind all ancient astronauts.
Right.
And we've had lots of investigation now, especially over the last 30 years, of ancient sites and arguments that human beings could not have built structure X, and therefore it must have been built by the aliens, where X could be pyramids in Egypt, pyramids in South America, stone structures like the Stonehenge or things that are even bigger than that and so on, underwater structures as well. So the conventional point of view is, yeah, human beings could do it if they really wanted to. But there are some arguments that are sort of like physics-based, I guess you might say, or factual-based, like, for example, if you're going to imagine that they got big stones in the big pyramid up by making big earth ramps and then rolling stones on trees that have been cut off, branches cut off, so they had cylinders, basically. There aren't enough trees in Egypt and the surrounding areas to do all that. And then where'd all the dirt go when they moved it away from the pyramids? So there are engineering, let's say engineering, not physics, but engineering arguments that suggest that it would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, for human beings to do. But then if you say, well, aliens must have done it, then why in the world would they do a thing like that?
Yeah.
To leave a message for the future that we were here, that would be a message that would only be decoded when human beings were smart enough to figure it out.
Well, I myself, I don't feel that. I have a problem when people say, well, we couldn't have built that, therefore aliens built it. This business, just because we don't understand something, saying that it was aliens that built it doesn't cut it for me. I don't know how you feel about it, but to me that doesn't prove anything, saying something like that. It could be a lost technology, you know, that we don't know about any longer. Who knows, you know, but to just come out and say, well, it was aliens, I just can't buy that, can you?
Yeah, well, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised.
No, I just mean that it's not proof of anything saying that, you know.
I'm saying the argument has been made, but, you know, there was definitely some sort of a technology which seemed to be a lot better than the average bash one stone against another stone and get something.
Oh, absolutely.
They talk about the very sharp corners and stuff in the architecture of in Peru, around Lake Titicaca.
Yeah.
Some of the things there where they have almost what look like machine-made holes and carvings and structures and so on. It'd be hard to imagine somebody being able to do anything like that without having a steel tool to work on to use against the stone.
Or the Nazca lines. The Nazca lines where they cut the tops off the mountains and there's no debris or anything around there.
Yeah, it appears that the flat top mountain with the Nazca lines on it. Again, we're talking about things that happened thousands or hundreds of thousands of years ago, tens of thousands of years ago. There aren't any writings that allow us to connect up with what those people were doing back then. So, I don't know. Aliens is in the mix, and that's about it. But on the other hand, I'd have to say that they probably didn't just show up in 1947 for the first time.
Right.
If they've been here in the last 60 years, they could have been here in the last 600 years or 6,000 years or 60,000 years. And genetic diddling is always a possible theory for how human beings happen to be generated out of existing species. It could still be going on. We just wouldn't know. Things like that happen over long periods of time, and it takes a long time for people to realize something has happened. Brain power were really increasing over the last 10,000 years, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't be able to tell it necessarily on a day-by-day or year-by-year basis, but over a period of hundreds of years, it might be able to. Well, we couldn't do it now, obviously, but one could imagine doing an IQ test 2,000 years ago, you know, pick 100 school children 2,000 years ago and do an IQ test, then do it again 1,000 years ago, and then a comparable test today, and see if the general IQ has increased.
I'm old enough now where I remember the movies, science fiction movies from the 50s and 60s that were all about alien contact. Some of them were good, most of them were bad. What is your gut feeling about such contact Would it be good or bad for us as a race?
Well, it's going to come as a shock no matter what, or maybe say a semi-shock. We've been sort of, except for the extreme skeptics in this subject, most people, I guess, a large percentage, 60% of the population, now thinks that UFO, quote, UFOs are real, unquote, whatever that means. And I guess everybody's happy with that situation as long as they don't start to kick butt. People generally don't tend to do anything unless there's a big force applied, right? And as long as a few people here and there may be diddled with by aliens, the rest of us are okay. Now, if the president went ahead and said, okay, they're here, and it's dinner time, you can bet there'd be a big panic. Whether we were going to eat them or they're going to eat us, I guess. But, you know, is it a, would it be a good thing? Well, in the last year or so, there's been a lot of talk about disclosure. Actually, over the last 10 years, I guess the disclosure idea was generated over 10 to 15 years ago. A period of time, or presumably a short period of time, over which suddenly people realize they're here, and but then the question is, now what? What are they doing here? And a question that I have raised is, even if they told us what they were doing, could we believe them?
Or could we understand it?
or could we understand it? Yeah, would we believe them? They might be telling the truth, but we don't understand it, or it's a truth that seems to be detrimental to our own civilization. You know, like the famous Twilight Zone movie, Serving Man.
I have to tell you this. I wrote that story.
You wrote that story?
I wrote that story, yes. That's
what?
Yeah, this is a true story.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You should be happy that I remember it.
I was stupid, you know. I sent it in to Rod Sterling. I never heard anything about it, and I had done what they call a poor man's copyright. I don't know if you know what that is. That's where you mail a copy to yourself so that you have proof that it's yours. I sent it in to him. I never heard nothing, and then all of a sudden it came on TV.
And unfortunately you didn't have a real copyright.
That's right. Well, you know, that was a long time ago.
No kidding. That was, what, back in the 60s?
Oh, it must have been, yeah. Yeah, I was in my early 20s, I think, when I did it.
Well,
that's a whole other story, though.
key to the movie was that people misinterpreted what Serving Man was all about.
That's right.
Until the last minute of the show. And so we have to wonder, could something like that happen? I suppose all sorts of scenarios have been played out by Hollywood types, going back to, of course, Orson Welles and the...
War of the Worlds you're thinking of. Mercury Theater. Yeah.
That's right. Which caught some people completely unawares, the way it was constructed. And, of course, I listened to it, you know, the way it was constructed. If you knew nothing about the subject, if you're totally new to the subject, you might actually believe things were happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, some similar situation with a lot of people coming into the subject today. For example, Joe Smith has never seen a UFO, has never really thought about it, but may have thought that any people who report them are nuts. Joe Smith's driving along a highway, sees this very bright light up in the sky, which suddenly darts over to the left and then to the right, makes a zigzag motion and shoots upwards. Wow, he's never seen anything like that. And by the way, this is not an unusual type of description that I am giving. The zigzag motion seems to be quite commonly reported. So he thinks he's seen a UFO. And maybe he has. Immediately, he's willing to accept almost anything on the Internet that is positive about UFOs. And this is not a good thing. You've got to use everybody who gets involved in the UFO subject has to have his own built-in filter factor.
Absolutely.
What can you accept or at least reasonably rational basis. Somebody who, like this Joe Smith I just talked about, who sees something which is truly unusual, is radicalized. Now all of a sudden almost anything goes. And I've had situations where people who have never seen anything see something, and it may be a real UFO or maybe a misidentification. They see something, get radicalized, and all of a sudden everything up in the sky is a UFO, it seems. So if you're gonna be a UFO witness, you have to be ready to try to shoot down your own sighting, I guess is about the only solution. Now, a lot of people do that. In a sense, they will send to me a photo or something and say, I don't know what this is, could you tell me? Instead of coming right out and saying, I think it's a UFO, they ask for me to give an opinion of what it is. Unfortunately, in most cases like that, like, for example, the accidental photographic UFO cases I've mentioned earlier, there isn't anything I can say. This may or may not be a real thing out there. Could be a bird, could be a balloon, could be a piece of dust blowing by, could be an insect close to the camera. Lots of possibilities. And I get maybe a dozen cases like that, or a couple of dozen every month, that just are indeterminate photo cases.
Well, you must be getting more and more every year because the different effects programs are getting so good.
Well, I get a lot of stuff personally sent to me. I get a lot of stuff. If I tried to tackle the internet and say, okay, let's go through all the sightings on the internet and decide if they're real or fake, I wouldn't live long enough to do that.
Nobody would.
So I have to use my own filter factor right off the bat. If somebody sends me something, I try to come up with the most reasonable explanation on first reading, you might say. Because I haven't got time to spend a lot investigating it. And these accidental photographic UFO cases are, quote, very easy to dismiss, unquote, because there's so little information about them. Unless the image is really distinct, there's not much you can say about it.
Right.
And then there are cases like the Jerusalem video, which had three or four videos supposedly showing the same thing. Well, one of those videos turned out to be an absolute fake. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. It was just a photograph. What they had was they had introduced this falling light onto a photograph of the background scene, and nothing moved in the photograph itself, just the UFO, the supposed UFO light. The first question that came to my mind was, if this actually happened over the Dome of the Rock, where are the hundreds of other witnesses? How did this happen over a period of like 30 seconds without the Israeli Defense Forces suddenly filling the air with the jets?
Yeah, right.
It's one of the most closely watched areas in the whole world, right?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
And even though it happened at like 2 o'clock in the morning, there's all sorts of people walking around doing stuff. So the first big problem that case had was the lack of the witnesses on the ground, you might say. It had a big bright flash attached to this video. And it was so bright in the video that it seemed to illuminate other buildings around it. Well, great. This can be done by CGI if you know what you're doing. So I say to myself, that's a very, very, very bright flash. I know that with lightning, you can tell that there was a lightning flash if you're sitting in a room in your house, and even if you're not looking out the window. Enough light comes in through the window so you can see a flash.
Right.
Why didn't other people see this flash, even if they were in their houses? And we know there were people out on the streets and so on. Why didn't anybody else report seeing, even if they didn't see the object itself, the light itself, why weren't there a lot of reports of, gee, there was this big flash of light that occurred. I wonder what that was. So you have to look at, when you take a case on like this, you have to look at all the related things that should have happened if this were true. And, of course, that involves a lot of knowing who the witnesses are. In this Russian rocket launch video that we were talking about, it's my impression that nobody knows who the videographer was.
Uh-huh.
Or when it was. It's just posted as a
right.
quote, possible UFO on the internet. Now what are you going to do with it?
Yeah, that's true. There have been some recent claims that data that was found in crop circles has been deciphered. Have you heard about that?
Well, I have not been following the crop circle phenomenon in the last 10 years as closely as I was during the first...
Well, there's a place called Chilbarton Observatory, yep. crop circle, and it has a face of an alien and a copy of the message we sent out into space.
And what, 5 or 7 years ago?
Yeah, we sent it out in the 70s, I think, the message. But what happened was a crop circle appeared. It's not a circle, actually. It's a copy of the message with slight changes in it. And these slight changes have to do with the way the bean looks in it. And has to do with the DNA and a couple of other things. Have you heard about that?
Well, that was 5 years ago or so. It was quite a while ago.
Yeah, it was a little while ago.
And like I said, I have not tried to do any research on this. I became convinced a long time ago that there was something unusual going on, but there are so many apparently man-made constructions. It's hard to tell in the mix of what to look for. Certain chemical or physiological changes in the grain itself, and things like in the original crop, what I call agroglyphs, actually pictures in agricultural crops, agroglyphs. Anyway, statements by the researchers that, for example, there will be layers, sort of like layers of grain bent down. The grain isn't killed, it's just bent over.
Right.
As if the stalk was softened and the grain bent. But then you'll have interweaving where there'll be a rotation in one direction at one level, a rotation in the opposite direction at another level in this crop circle. And you have to ask yourself, how do you do that if you're going to get out there with a board and start stomping on the grain? You do that, you crush everything under the board or under the board in the same direction. Anyway, the circle that you're talking about, I remember hearing about, you know, thinking, well, isn't that marvelous? It certainly would be a tough construction to make. As I recall, there's one which is shaped like a disc.
That was the other one that they said they deciphered, the disc.
Which seems to have ASCII code built into it or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, correct.
What can you say? Somebody smart enough to do that could figure out, could design something presumably and go ahead and do it.
Well, I claim that the crop is subject to heat. They just found this out lately, that it's subject to some kind of flash heat. So it makes me wonder if somebody could actually go out there, say, with a blowtorch or something, with a special attachment maybe, and just get enough heat to bend these things without breaking them, you know, not use a board, you know.
But, you know, there have been, Colin Andrews put together many years ago this Operation Blackbird, if I recall correctly the title, where they monitored fields at night using infrared and visible mm-hmm. photography and so on.
And they saw the two UFOs creating the circle.
If my recollection is correct, during this operation, they saw nothing, and the next morning there was a crop circle there.
Oh, that's not the one I'm thinking of. I was thinking of the one where they saw two UFOs that were over an area for about 15 and 20 minutes, and then a crop circle appeared.
You're thinking of the Steve Alexander, or is it a video of these two things moving around in the field?
Yeah, probably.
And suddenly the grain starts to lie down. That wasn't 30 minutes, that was... more like 15 or 20 seconds, as I recall.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Then there's another video, and these are videos from the 90s, the latter 90s. There's another video of a light that moved around over a field and then goes off in the distance and goes past a tractor driver who claimed that he actually saw it.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the video shows it going past him, and he supposedly was interviewed afterwards and said that he actually saw it going by. But this is my recollection of stuff that happened more than 10 years ago now. And as I said, I have not been keeping up on the crop circle stuff, so I wouldn't be surprised if people could, with technology that goes beyond stomping on boards, do things to the crop. Where the rubber meets the road is what has actually been done to the crop stalks themselves. And if you stomp on boards or use mechanical means like that, you're going to break this stuff. It's typically brittle. You're going to break the crop. You're not going to just soften it. And one of the early stories where the crop would be bent down, and then it would grow back upwards. That is, the main stalk would stay sloped, but the newer stalk, as it grows lengthwise, would grow upwards. So the stuff wasn't killed. There have been suggestions that this was not aliens, but this is a military operation. And I've seen things as bizarre as claiming that the satellites fly over Britain and shine a laser beam down onto the crop and create these crop circles. Mm-hmm. Don't buy, because if you are shining the argument is sort of like, imagine electromagnetic radiation in a microwave oven that cooks stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
It heats the water. It's the microwave radiation frequency that heats water. And so if you could shine that down on the crop, presumably you could cause it to wilt or whatever due to this microwave heating. Well, first of all, there are no satellites with super powerful microwave transmission lasers or whatever. But even if there were, you'd be shining down on the top of the crop, whereas most of the bending occurs right an inch or so above the ground. And how could you cause the microwave radiation to skip over the tops of the grain, not killing it, and concentrate itself down at the bottom of the stalk? That could be several feet of travel through a dense population of grain stalks. Bottom line being, I don't buy the government theory of satellites flying over and creating circles, or high-flying aircraft creating circles, or lasers creating circles, or microwave radiation creating circles, etc. Whatever it does, it's truly bizarre, I would say.
Well, I find it really bizarre that some people actually get sick when they step into the center of these circles.
Yeah, I know there have been reports of physiological and physical things, like cameras stop working.
Right.
People have various feelings while being in the circles. I can't really comment on that. This is what I have heard.
Mm-hmm.
I remember an engineer guy back in the 80s, the latter 80s that I met. Let's say he was an engineering type of person, mechanical engineer. As he was in Britain, this must have been the middle 80s, 85, 86, somewhere, about the time when the first modestly complex circular constructions were being found in the grain in the fields near Stonehenge, or within 30, 40 miles of Stonehenge. He said that when he was there on doing something rather for a company, he found out from a reading in the newspaper, I think, that there was a circular construction that was found off of highway something or other. So he went there. He noted that there was a military police or police vehicle, like a truck or something like that. I think the way he portrayed it was sort of like this construction was on the side of a hill. The military vehicle was up at the top of the hill, but had a perfect view of anybody going into the circle. So anyway, somehow he manages to get into the circle himself, walks to the center of it, and he told me he found a rock there of a particular type. And this rock had been cracked. It was broken into several chunks. And this is at the center of a crop circle back in the old days. The centers of the crop circles had these whorls, you might say, or whorls of grain. Sometimes the grain would still be standing up at the very center of this circle, and all the other grain around it laying over. He said he found this rock, which was cracked, and he knew from his engineering experience that it would take somebody with a sledgehammer pounding on this rock in order to crack it. Something cracked the rock, but he didn't know it wasn't mechanical. He said, he looked very carefully, and he said, the rock is long on, it's very, ground tends to be soft and muddy in Britain because it's wet there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, this was sitting on sort of like semi-soft mud. And he said, if I had whacked that rock in place with a sledgehammer, I would have driven it down into the mud. I wouldn't have cracked it. To him, this was very convincing evidence of something unusual going on, because something had cracked that rock without driving it into the mud. You can tell if a rock has been cracked relatively recently. Now this, and this was right at the center of this crop circle where he found it. So that convinced him that something was strange going on, and he contacted me within a year of that event. He contacted me and got interested in the whole UFO stuff. But that's the closest that I've got to, a semi-personal connection with crop circle research.
Hmm. That almost sounds like sound was used, because if some kind of heat was used, they would have heated the mud up, too.
Yeah.
What is your feeling about so many countries releasing their UFO reports? Do you think we're getting the whole story, or that these things are being filtered?
Well, are the governments releasing everything? Well, of course, I don't know. We know that some of the governments appear to be taking a favorable attitude, like in Brazil, in this case in Chile, where they have recently set up an official commission to investigate UFO sightings, especially the ones that are involved with their military. We know that in the middle 90s, after Perestroika and, what was the other term?
Glasnost.
Glasnost and Perestroika in Russia. Essentially, the Russians were willing to sell anything to make some money.
Right.
And they allowed various researchers, including George Knapp, to go over there and have at it through their KGB files looking for UFO stuff. And certain stories did come out. We know the story that Stalin evidently reacted to the story about Roswell by setting up a classified secret group under a mathematician by the name of Korolev. No, he was the father of...
of rocketry.
Rocketry, that's what he was, right. Actually, I remember now. We were told in 1993 or 4 or 5 by a guy, B-U-R-K, something or other, that he had learned that there were two secret groups set up. One under Korolev was supposed to look into the Roswell case, and an independent under a mathematician by the name of Keldysh, who was also supposed to look at the UFO situation in general, I guess. And both of these people were to report directly to Stalin what the situation was. Korolev supposedly reported that, yeah, it was real, but it's not something that's going to impact the Soviet Union or worse to that effect. It wasn't something to worry about. And he got something similar from Keldysh, I guess. Anyway, that's the type of information that was coming out of Russia in the middle 90s. I was getting actually Soviet reports, or Russian reports at the time, and... I remember reading that the claim that the whole of the Russian military was doing investigations. They had been ordered in the 80s to be...
To watch the skies. I remember that, yeah. I remember that.
The world's largest UFO organization or reporting organization was the Soviet military in the 80s.
Right. It was like 11 million military watching the skies.
Whatever it was. And they got some stuff, apparently. But even with all that massive amount of data, it wasn't enough to push to kill all the skepticism. I mean, we're stuck here and now, at the present day, this very instant, whenever you, the listener, hears this, we're stuck in a tradition that was established in August 29th, 1952, I would say. 1952 was the year of the UFO. The U.S. government collected, or the Air Force collected about 1,500 sighting reports during that year, most of which occurred in June, July, and August. And there were so many sightings in July and August, tens of sightings per day throughout the United States, and if you could even include the rest of the world having some sightings as well. There were newspaper stories all over the United States. It was absolutely hard to believe, reading this history on a day-by-day basis, practically, it's hard to believe that nothing happened as a result of all this. The people on the inside must have thought an invasion was imminent.
Well, especially when all the UFOs appeared over the White House, I think it was in 53.
Yeah, 52.
Oh, was that 52 also? Okay.
Yep. Well, the reason I say that it was the year of the UFO was the number of sightings, but also I was working myself back to what I call a tradition. The tradition that there's nothing to UFO sightings was cast in stone on July 29th, 1952, by General John A. Samford at a press conference.
I saw that, yeah.
The previous 2 weekends, there had been radar and visual sightings of things, lights, objects, moving in the restricted areas over the White House and over Washington, D.C. For 2 weekends, the first weekend, these things were reported in the newspapers, and a lot of newspaper guys were asking, you know, what the heck is really going on? And the Air Force was saying, well, we're investigating. This is the days of Project Blue Book, the early Project Blue Book under Captain Edward J. Ruppelt. We're working on it. In the meantime, they were getting flooded by sighting reports, and they just absolutely could not keep up. When it hit the Washington Press the first weekend of the sightings, I think the 19th, 20th, 21st type of weekend, it caused a big stir. And during the week, the newspaper story came out saying that Air Force jets had been directed to shoot down UFOs if they couldn't get them to land. And a press reaction to that was, this doesn't sound like a very good idea to me. Who knows what they can do?
That's right.
Then the second weekend of sightings came along, and just reading these sighting reports, it's astounding what was going on. And the reason it's astounding what was going on, the more astounding is that it had zero effect. You had virtually every major paper in the United States reporting that witnesses were seeing flying saucers all over the place. The second weekend of sightings over Washington, D.C., 25th, 26th, 27th, something like that, made it into the press, and the radar controllers were interviewed, and the story got out, you know, and the radar guys were saying, well, we saw what looked like very strong targets appearing and disappearing, and one of the key things was when they had called jet aircraft to scrambled aircraft the week before, and they couldn't scramble them from Andrews Air Force Base, which would be the logical source, because something was happening to the runway is being reconstructed or something. They had to wait 2 hours, I think it was, for the jet to arrive from an air base in Delaware. And the same sort of thing happened the second weekend. They just didn't have anybody on call. And of course, that was a sort of a political faux pas on the part of the Air Force that they couldn't protect they could not instantaneously protect the Capitol.
Mm.
But anyway, the UFO aspect was that when the plane did arrive, one of the pilots said he could see this light ahead of him. It was traveling ahead of him, and on radar they could see the airplane, and then they could see this object ahead. And then all of a sudden it sped up, and he was reporting it pulling away from him, and they could see it pulling away on the radar. So they had a lot of what appeared to be radar visual confirmation going on. And it made it into the newspapers. Edward J. Ruppelt found out about it as it was happening because the previous weekend he had found out about the sightings from reading a Washington newspaper. Now, on this last weekend in August, he was told about it almost immediately, but he was in in Dayton, Ohio, and these were sightings, of course, were happening in Washington, D.C. So he could only react to it indirectly. Anyway, it turned out that the Chief of Staff of the Air Force directed, that was General Vandenberg, directed John A. Sanford, the head of Air Force Intelligence, to hold a press conference and answer questions from the press about what was going on, or who knows exactly what the directive was. We have a document which was a briefing for General Sanford that had already been created the week before. And so he used this thing that was supposed to be a briefing for him. He turned it into a briefing for the press. And on 29th of July at 4 p.m., this big press conference started. It lasted a couple hours. During this press conference, Sanford said that they had been studying over 1,000 sightings, and the most important aspect of this was that there seemed to be no threat to the United States. And then he went on to say that, as far as he was concerned, in many words and over a period of time, he basically reiterated the idea that everything was misidentifications. As far as he was concerned, it was all weather phenomena, beam bending, mirage-type effects had occurred, he claimed, during the Washington, D.C. sightings, and that explained why the radar picked up things that they wouldn't ordinarily pick up. Now, this is, of course, his opinion, but it was stated as being factual, and the press grabbed it and ran away, and the next day said there were stories in the Washington press and throughout the United States saying UFOs or flying saucers are just hot air. So that essentially established a tradition. Here was the general in charge of Air Force investigation of all these sightings, saying that as far as he was concerned, it was all natural phenomena, and weather phenomena explained the radar sightings. So that sort of set a tradition that there is nothing to UFO sightings, and the press was happy with that and ran away with it. What the press uh-huh. did not know was what Sanford's intelligence office told the FBI. Now, the FBI was brought into this subject in 1947 at the request of the Air Force to investigate witnesses to find out if there were any communist subversives generating flying saucer reports in order to cause the American people to lose confidence that their Air Force could defend the skies, okay? In other words, when the sighting started in June of 1947, and there were a potload of them in early July of 1947, probably hundreds throughout the United States, the Air Force immediately was asked, are they yours? And they said, and the Air Force said, no, we don't know what it is. It's definitely not ours. As part of their immediate investigation, they brought in the FBI to find out people were generating spurious reports, communist sympathizers. J. Edgar Hoover was happy to do that. Because he was really into subversives, mm-hmm. catching them, you know. And so that's how the FBI got involved. There's a lot more story to that, but that's for another day. The FBI got out of direct investigations in August of 1947, but acted like a black hole from then on. The Air Force would send the FBI stuff, and the FBI would store it. It turned out that the Congress directed the FBI to never throw anything that was in headquarters in Washington, D.C., never throw anything away. So when I asked if there were any UFO documents in 1977, they released 1,600 pages of stuff, and you can see this stuff all now on the FBI page.
Right.
FBI.gov. And as a matter of fact, it made a big splash just a couple of months ago when the FBI revamped their web page and emphasized some UFO documents, one of which said that a UFO had crashed, a 1950 document that said the UFO had crashed and there were bodies and all sorts of stuff. You may remember that big flap that occurred mm-hmm. in the press back in March of this year. Well, the FBI was not actively involved in the UFO investigation, but because of all the sightings, they were trying to keep track of what was going on. So if we jump back now to July 29th, 1952, at the time of General Sanford's press conference when he said everything was natural phenomena as far as he was concerned. The FBI sent an agent to Air Force Intelligence in the Pentagon to find out what was going on with all these sightings. And the agent was told a number of things, such as 2% of the sightings approximately cannot be explained, period. And that some people in the Air Force are considering that at least some of the sightings could be interplanetary ships. These are words straight out of the FBI document that report what this guy was told. Interplanetary ships. Now, if Sanford had said, oh, yeah, well, we're considering the possibility of interplanetary ships at his press conference, the lid would have blown off. But instead, he said it's all natural phenomena, and thereby established what I call a tradition that there's nothing to UFOs. And we're still living under that tradition.